And I have some things going on in the news and action I'd like to tell you about and hopefully encourage you to participate. One of the first things I'd like to tell you about, it's been in the news many times over the years, but just bring it back up to people's awareness, is triclosan, is an antibacterial pesticide that is used in many of our hand soaps and beauty products. And it has been found to cause, it's an endocrine disruptor, and it's been found to cause lots of problems in people's health. And it's used not only in hand soaps, but in toothpaste and in cosmetics. And it interferes with thyroid and estrogen hormones. And there's been lots of studies really linking it to so many problems, including breast cancer. So I want to really encourage people not to buy these antibacterial hand soaps. They're really bad for you. Just use a plain soap without all these artificial ingredients in them. And also to sign the petition that's on my website at ieatgreen.com and let the FDA know that you want this kind of product to be monitored and taken off the market if it really is unhealthy. You know, right now all these products, you know, fly under the radar. If they're not being ingested and just used, they really don't protect us. So I also want to encourage everyone to go to the Environmental Working Group, which is a wonderful website. They've been guests on my show before. But the Environmental Working Group has a list of do's and don'ts when it comes to beauty products, you know, what's healthy, what's not healthy. And it's really a wonderful resource to just educate yourself. They also have a list of sunscreens. And this time of year, I want to get people to think about the sunscreen that they use. As parents, you know, we are so concerned about our children getting sunburned and protecting them from the sun. However, the stuff that we're putting on them, you got to remember, skin is our largest organ. It's not just a surface, you know, that is non-porous. Our skin is an organ, and it's very porous, and everything we put on our skin goes into our bodies. And it's very important that you put only natural products on your children's skin. So look at the ingredients. Again, you can also go to the Environmental Working Group, and they have a whole list of sunscreens that are good and sunscreens that are really dangerous. So I really recommend people using the Environmental Working Group. That's EWG.org. And educating yourself as to what products are safe to use and what products are not. Also, the House of Representatives, I'm sure you have heard about this, is trying to supposedly take a burden off of school districts that don't have the money to fund a healthier school lunch program by going backwards. You know, we've always had this where you take a couple steps forward and then, you know, even more steps backwards, that we don't get anywhere in improving school lunches. And we've just been making some progress, partially thanks to Michelle Obama in her Let's Move campaign. But we really need to focus more on the actual food. But what's happening is because so many school districts are challenged financially to meet the higher standards, the House of Representatives is trying to vote on weakening those requirements and going backwards. And so we need to really urge our members of Congress to stop the attack on the healthy school lunch standards and to support them and to find money for them. If we need to help fund them, we need to find money for them. I mean, there's a big movement in Free for All. Jan Pompadick, years ago, when she was a guest on my show, and her book, Free for All, is about promoting a school lunch program that is healthy and free for everyone so that there is no stigma attached to being a part of the free and reduced lunch program, which is a problem because kids need this food, but we need this food to be healthy so that we're really helping these kids be able to learn better and be healthier and stronger. If you don't eat right, you cannot learn up to your potential. So there's enough studies proving that, and we really need to support that. So let's let our House of Representatives know that we want to support healthy school lunch. You know, even the Michelle Obama's campaign could be doing more in promoting healthy school lunch. I mean, she, you know, the focus of her program has now gone towards let's move and getting kids to move. But as we've seen from the movie Fed Up and so many other movies, it's not just about kids moving. It's about the quality of the food and the sugars that are in all the foods that we're feeding them. So we really need to step up to the plate and try to make that a little bit better for them. In the news, really good news, is that one out of three households in this country are now growing food. That sounds remarkable to me, and it's really wonderful news. The more we get people to start growing their own food, we can reduce our own food costs and be eating higher quality food. So it's really great. There's a real young movement of people caring about our foods, as you know. Many of you listening are part of that movement. And I just want to encourage you, this is the time. If you haven't yet planted seeds or seedlings, it's not too late. It's only the beginning of June, so you still have a good handful of months to grow vegetables. And if you don't have a lot of space, think about container planting. You can plant in pots out on your fire escape or in your windowsill. You know, it's really fun to just have the fresh herbs right there to use, to pick a fresh tomato. There's nothing quite like it. So think about that. There's some great things going on in and around the city. Tonight we have our local Slow Food Chapters meeting. That's Slow Food Huntington, soon to be Slow Food North Shore. Our name change won't be official until the fall, but for now you'll be hearing us referred to as Slow Food Huntington and North Shore. But the Slow Food movement, for those of you unfamiliar with Slow Food, is about good, clean, and fair food. And I am one of the chapter leaders of our local chapter. And what we do is try to raise awareness about the wonders of cooking food and it being real food, and coming together around that food, building community and conviviality. So I actually am very excited. On Monday, I'll be hosting a couple from Torino, Italy, who will be coming here. They are the couple that hosted me the last two times I went to Terra Madre, which is the biannual or every other year, I don't know, is that biannual? Every other year, there's a big slow food conference in Torino, Italy. And this couple has hosted myself and my husband and my other delegates from New York. And I'm really thrilled to have the opportunity to host them here. And we'll be taking a part in Slow Food East End's celebration of, it's called Shellebration, on Thursday out in Montauk. And so I'm really excited to introduce them to the slow food movement here in the States. But, you know, it's a continuum of bringing people together and the friends that you make around food. And so I'm really excited to be hosting them. Also, July 6th and every Sunday throughout the growing season, Restoration Farm is hosting their Tin House Music Concert Series. And that's from 2 to 5 on Sundays. And the first hour is an open mic, and then they have a concert with musicians that they've hired for the day. So it's a really fun time. It's a nice way to see the garden. And Restoration Farm, if you don't know of it, is in Old Bethpage Village. It's on the, you know, outer property of Old Bethpage Village on Long Island. Also, I'll be starting farm-to-table cooking classes. My first one is July 9th, and then it will be every other Wednesday throughout the growing season. You can reserve your spots on my IE Green website or Facebook page, and you can buy the tickets through Eventbrite. So each class, we will pick the vegetables right from the garden, and the menu will be designed around what we're harvesting that week. So come on out to those. Also, I'll be hosting a farm-to-table socially responsible investing dinner. And what that is, I've been working with Morgan Stanley. I know it's a traditional investing company. But, you know, through the encouragement of 350.org a few years ago when they did their tour to divest in all fossil fuel companies, I started looking into, you know, where my IRAs were invested. You know, I don't have a lot of money to invest, but I have, you know, stuff that we've been putting away over years, and I had no idea where it was invested in. So, of course, as I looked into it, I did have things just in general mutual funds that had investments in things I didn't want to be invested in. So now I have divested in anything that having to do with fossil fuel companies or any biotech companies like Monsanto. And I'm really happy to say that we did better than most of the traditional mutual funds. So this farm-to-table dinner party is really geared to help introduce people to some of the options out there that you can participate in so that you are using your money to grow for you, but at the same time you're investing in companies that you can be proud of and that are in alignment with your philosophy. So if you want information about that, you can also find out more on my website. Okay, I'm going to introduce you to this recipe. This is a Swiss macaroni and cheese recipe, and it's different than a usual macaroni and cheese because that's made with a cheddar cheese. This is made with a Swiss cheese and Gruyere cheese, and it's really very delicious. So I do it usually with gluten-free pasta because I'm making it for my clients who are gluten-free. So you can use gluten-free pasta or whole wheat pasta or just organic semolina pasta, whatever you like. You're going to have two medium organic potatoes that you're going to cut into half-inch cubes, a half a teaspoon of nutmeg, 1 pound of the pasta, two large organic onions peeled and diced, 4 tablespoons organic butter, plus 2 tablespoons oil or butter for the onions, 4 tablespoons organic unbleached white flour or gluten-free flour, 2 cups of grated Gruyere and Swiss cheese, 2 cups of organic milk, and you can also use soy milk or rice milk for this, or almond milk for that matter, but unsweetened, salt and pepper, 1 cup of gluten-free breadcrumbs or regular breadcrumbs, 1 to 2 teaspoons chopped garlic, 2 tablespoons parsley, and salt and pepper to taste. And you're going to bring the large pot of water to a boil and add salt to it, and boil the pasta up until cooked, and then just put that to the side. Meanwhile, you're going to saute the onions in some butter or olive oil. I usually use olive oil because I feel like the recipe has enough other butter. And actually, in with the pasta, you're also going to cook the potatoes. And you cut the potatoes into 1-inch cubes that they'll cook in the same amount of time as the potatoes, so you don't have to do 2 separate steps. So you're cooking the pasta and the potatoes together until they're cooked, and then remove them and drain them. And just keep stirring the pasta so that it doesn't stick together. And then in a heavy skillet, you're going to make a roux with the butter and the flour. And to make a roux, it's equal parts of butter to flour. And in this case, we're doing 4 tablespoons of butter and 4 tablespoons of either white flour or gluten-free flour. And you're going to whisk that together, preventing clumps, and then gradually add the milk or the rice milk to that. And continue stirring with the whisk until it's just getting thicker. Then add the nutmeg, salt, and pepper to taste, and the cheese. And mix it all up until everything is melted. And then in a large bowl, you can combine the pasta, the potatoes, the onions, and the cheese. Actually, I don't think I said that you're going to be sautéing the onions. Oh, yes, I did. Sautéing the onions in another pot cast iron pan, and add that. So you have the sautéed onions mixed in with the pasta, the potatoes, and the cheese. And then you pour that into an oiled glass casserole dish, and then you're going to make a breadcrumb topping. And so with the breadcrumbs, just melt a little butter or olive oil, some garlic and fresh parsley, salt and pepper, and make a seasoned breadcrumb mixture. And you're going to sprinkle that on the top. And then you're going to bake it uncovered for about 20 minutes in the oven, just until it all gets steamy and crispy on the top. And you can serve it with warmed applesauce. And it's really delicious. It's one of those comfort foods. Might not be for this season. Might be a little bit more wintery-ish. But either way, delicious. Okay, so now it's my pleasure to introduce you all to Carolyn Cohen. As I said before, she's the co-founder of Food Fight, which is an organization that aims to revolutionize the way we eat and think about food. They use schools as a platform to teach teachers, students, and school staff, and to actually give them tools and knowledge so that they can make healthier choices and become role models and agents of change for their families and communities. Carolyn, are you with me?
Yes, I am.
Hi, welcome. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Sure. So why don't we start by you just telling us a little bit more about Food Fight and their mission and when they started and all that good stuff.
Okay. So I started Food Fight almost 5 years ago with a colleague, my colleague Deb Lewis and Grant, and both of us were teachers in New York City public high schools for many years. And we saw firsthand every day, you know, the ravages of this health crisis we're facing as a country. And, you know, our students came to school with chips and soda for breakfast and would eat Big Macs for lunch and KFC for dinner. I mean, they really subsisted off of a diet of fast food and junk food. And we saw them, you know, really struggle with their ability to focus and ultimately succeed in school. They were plagued with chronic health problems. And we also, at the same time, just understood how little they knew about the food that they were eating and the connection that it had to their ability to succeed. And so we came together to design a curriculum for high school students, really to engage them around the issues of food and more broadly kind of food, the food system and, you know, what's referred to as food politics. Because we knew that for high school students at least, you know, and I think this is true for most adults, just waving broccoli in front of someone or telling people to eat more fruits and vegetables does not work. But engaging them and kind of getting them to think about how they eat and themselves as consumers really does kind of awaken them to this issue, to their problems, both on a personal level and a societal level, and get them to make really significant changes.
How did you get the teachers and the schools to be willing to add curriculum? That's the thing that I've always come across with all the testing and the push that these teachers have to get their test scores up and to meet the standards.
Right.
Any new curriculum, every time I've tried to introduce a new curriculum idea, even like just a garden into a school, the first thing you get is resistance because the teachers are so overwhelmed trying to teach to the tests already.
Right.
That they say they have no extra time for any added curriculum.
Right.
How did you get around that?
So we mapped the state standards for history, English, social studies, and health onto our curriculum. So you actually could technically teach our course for credit in those departments. But I would say the majority of the teachers that worked with us, you know, some did teach it in those departments, but many chose to do it as their own elective. There were a lot of Food Fight courses that really were just our course. It takes a commitment to finding the time to devote to that.
Mm-hmm. 'Cause, I mean, there's been so many studies at this point showing that if you get the kids out into the garden and you really engage them in some hands-on activity, that it enhances their learning. But at the same time, I've, you know, seen this resistance in trying to bring it into the programs.
Right. Look, I mean, it's true that there's tremendous pressure on teachers to increase test scores and teach specific materials. So I'm, as a teacher, I'm sympathetic to, you know, the sense that you have to deal with one more thing. But we, you know, as a food fighter, I also know how important it is to engage teachers. And once they begin their work with us, you know, they're very excited to incorporate our materials into the curriculum. And we've also kind of relaxed the model in that we used to only work with teachers who really were teaching the course as a full semester course, but now we've turned the curriculum into more of a resource guide so that really any teacher who wants to teach either a mini lesson or a series of mini lessons or just a one-off class or an after-school program can use our lessons in all kinds of ways.
Mm-hmm.
It's a much more flexible.
Yeah, and are your lessons open to any teacher to get them like offline, or is it something that they have to sign up for?
They should contact Food Fight. They're not online yet, but this is something that we're working on right now. So they can certainly reach out to us, and we can get them.
Right now, how does it work? You have a mandatory teacher workshop that teachers need to take in order to
be
part of your program?
Teachers have to commit their school to working with us. And actually, at this point, our first point of entry is our teacher wellness initiative, because we have seen how teachers can either promote a wellness initiative and enable it to succeed, or really, you know, work as a hindrance to any wellness initiative if they are not behind it. I mean, because teachers create the culture in the school, you really need their buy-in for any program to succeed. And so that is why, from the feedback that we got from the teachers we worked with around our Food Fight in the Classroom program with the curriculum, many of those teachers reported feeling kind of like the lone voice in their school, like they were the only ones pushing wellness initiatives, and they really wanted something to engage their colleagues in this kind of in this field around these ideas, and to really be a force with them behind whatever wellness program or initiative was happening in their school. So we designed this teacher wellness initiative that now we run in all of our schools as kind of our first point of entry to get everybody on the same page. And we really do, when I say school staff, it really is teachers, principals, cafeteria workers, school staff, you know, paras and secretaries as well.
Really, so they all, it's mandatory that they all participate in this
initial 70% of the staff to participate.
Wow, that must make a difference.
Yeah, it really does. It really does, and they love it. They really, it's also the first time many of them have actually sat in a meeting together. I know as a teacher, I never knew, you know, some of them are really, you know, had the time to engage with them in that way. So I would say one unintended consequence has been this kind of community building aspect of it.
Mm-hmm. Which is perfect, because that's what food does.
Right.
Right? It's supposed to bring people together.
Right.
And
mm-hmm.
So that's a perfect way to start. I know, you know, you're so right when you talk about if people aren't on board, how it can even sabotage a program. You know, when I took over the cafeteria at our local Waldorf school here, I remember, you know, there were a few teachers who for whatever reason, were like, well, I think the food's fine. I'm never going to eat at your food, you know.
Right.
And, you know, they took this stance like they weren't going to buy into it. And, you know, it, of course, you know, the food won them over eventually, but it was, you know, it was really interesting to watch how some people, if they're resistant and they try to spread that resistance or negativity, it can really work against you.
Right. No, it's really critical to have the teachers promoting whatever it is, you know, you're trying to do.
Right. So tell us a little more. So you start with this teacher wellness initiative when you go into a school. And then is your curriculum broken up into different age groups, age-appropriate groups?
So we have we do this workshop, and then we work with a select number of teachers from that school around our curriculum. And so then the teacher will get the curriculum and go off and teach that course. And if they're doing it in the most intense way, like really, you know, as a semester-long course, we often send in, we have a team of chefs and doctors and nutritionists who we work with, and often we'll send them in to the classroom to support the work that they're doing. And then we last year started a series of parent workshops as well, which is something that we're really excited to develop in the in the fall where we really bring together large groups of parents. So far we've been doing it, like we've been kind of modeling it after the teacher piece and doing it for each school. But we would like to set up larger workshops where, you know, larger groups of parents can come together for the workshop. Because, you know, it's been wonderful to see how receptive parents are to the workshop and to getting this material and information.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, so many parents, you know, they're hearing about the healthy diet, and yet they feel like they're between a rock and a hard place in both the money that they have to spend on food,
right,
the time they have to spend cooking,
right,
and their kids' willingness to eat the food that they cook. It's the last thing you want to do is spend the money, spend the time, and then
have your kids
put it on the kid
it.
And your kids won't eat it.
Right, right.
So,
it's true. It's hard. I mean, we really work a lot with just very practical, delicious, easy, affordable recipes. You know, things, and no recipe that we offer takes more than 20 minutes or half an hour to make. We talk a lot about, you know, making this a priority because, you know, the issues around money and time are all super important and you know, things that we need to figure out. But the most important first step is deciding that it's an important value, you know. And once you decide, like, yes, it is worth my spending, you know, a Saturday or Sunday afternoon cooking and setting myself up to eat healthfully all week, you know, and it's important that I bring my kids with me to the supermarket, and it's important to, like, make this a priority in our family. That's kind of our first step, because once you kind of invest, you shift your thinking and decide that it's a worthy investment, the rest kind of begins to fall into place.
Mm-hmm. And are most of your workshops separated between the teachers are one workshop, the parents are another, and the students
yeah.
are another?
And
or
the students
are
in another. Yeah,
together.
That's how we've been doing it so far. There's been some discussion about mixing teachers and parents, but we actually feel like, while the information may not be so different, it's actually creates a different feeling in the room to have just, you know, the school staff in one workshop, not mixed in with the parents.
Mm-hmm. Right. But I think you're right on in engaging the parents as well, because if you're teaching one thing in the school and then they're going home and it's not supported,
Right. I mean, although high school students are actually a huge driver in terms of what's bought in the household, in American households. And so we've seen this actually firsthand, that parents will come to us and say, my kids came home and, you know, talked about their lessons and what they're learning in school. And, you know, we have made huge changes. You know, the kids will mm-hmm. sometimes go through the pantry and throw things out. They'll start reading labels. We'll teach the parents. So we've definitely gotten many reports of the students teaching their parents.
Absolutely.
Kind of along
the
lines
of... about the high school students being a big driver. I mean, little kids are big drivers, too. They're marketed to so heavily. And, I mean, I remember being shocked one time when a girlfriend of mine, I went to her house and she had rainbow bread at her house.
Right.
And like, what? And it was, you know, artificially colored red, green, and white bread.
Right.
I was like, what are you doing? And she goes, well, we were at the supermarket together and the kids saw it and they wanted it so bad, so I bought it. I was like, you can't do that, you know? And
right.
So, you know, and here's someone who absolutely knows.
Right.
And she was even broke down and succumbed to her
right.
little
well, this
kid's
is,
pressure. So.
This is a lot of what we teach. I would say a huge focus of our workshops are on media and how marketing and advertisements shape what we eat and buy, because just kind of waking up to these, you know, market forces that prey on us and work, you know, like this is a perfect example that you just gave, that even someone who is sophisticated and has been thinking about these issues could break down, because it's like a war we're fighting with, against these forces, you know. It's very hard to, resist the lure of marketing.
Oh, it's so
and
hard.
Advertising.
It's so hard. I remember being in a supermarket when my child was young. I had my last one. If she was my first, would have been an only child, because she was so tough, so strong-willed.
Uh-huh.
And I remember taking her to the supermarket, and, you know, I wasn't buying that kind of stuff, and her wanting it. And I'm saying no, and she's sitting in the shopping cart. She proceeds to have a full-out temper tantrum
right.
in the supermarket. And complete season's like, oh, just give it to her. Oh, just buy it. You know,
right,
just,
right.
Telling me to buy it for her. I mean, because everyone, it was obvious what was going on. And I had to, like, leave my wagon and walk out of the store.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. No, it's true. And people often, you know, parents, especially in New York City, are so overworked and so busy and, you know, at the end of the day are not up for these battles and often do succumb. And I don't think people see that food is just another area of the way that we as parents have to discipline our kids. You know, our kids also want to watch 8 hours of TV a day, but we don't allow them because we know that that's not a good choice for them, you know, and we make all kinds of choices for them. But I so often hear from parents, you know, my kid will only eat white pasta. That's all he ever eats. And, mm-hmm. you know, that's that I would have the same response. Like, that is just not a healthy choice for that kid. And the parent needs to help the kid see that and make other choices.
Right, right. You know, that's one of the reasons I also, I'm sure you do talk to people about going out to eat and eating out. And
right.
How do you approach that? Because I think so much, especially living in New York City, I mean, there's so many people that just don't cook at all.
Right, right. I mean, you know, that is, it is tricky, and we do offer some practical tips. I mean, mainly it's staying away from fast food. That is, you know, we show people how they can save, actually really save money. You know, we make a chili that, you know, costs about $15 and serves, you know, four people, and you cannot go out. I guess unless it's fast food, you know, you can't go out to dinner for that amount of money.
Mm-hmm.
So we do, you know, we talk about really steering clear of fast food restaurants and, you know, what to do if you're in a regular
mm-hmm.
restaurant as well.
You know, but not even fast food. I mean, as a natural food chef, very often I'm looking for, you know, buying healthy food in bulk because I want to make it a little bit less expensive because I'm cooking for a lot of people. And, you know, this past weekend I was cooking food for a bridal shower. And, you know, I go to Restaurant Depot sometimes
uh-huh.
Because I get my plastic gloves there, my aluminum pans there, and
yeah.
Rags there. But there's very little food that I can get there.
Right, right.
Very little food that I can get there. But I was really happy to see they had wild shrimp from Louisiana.
Uh-huh.
Right, so it's like, oh great! So I bought this wild shrimp, a 5-pound bag. You know, it wasn't cleaned and deveined, which of course meant I was gonna have to clean it and devein, and I wasn't thrilled about that. But I bought it anyway, and I got it home, and I put it in. As I'm taking it out of the cooler that I had in my car and put it in the freezer, I look at it, and there's a preservative in it. It's frozen.
Yeah.
And there's a preservative, two preservatives. One preservative to keep freshness, and one preservative to help with moisture retention. I'm like, I've never seen a preservative. That's why you freeze it. That's the preservative. It's frozen.
Right.
Why do you have to put a preservative in? I've never seen it, and I brought it back. And I went to the, and I took the time to talk to the manager. I was like, if someone, you finally got wild shrimp. Someone who's looking for wild shrimp cares about their health, usually.
Right, right.
You know, and is choosing wild shrimp because it's better than farm-raised and dredging up the ocean floor, et cetera, et cetera. I was like, this is ridiculous.
Right.
And, of course, I returned it, and he said he was going to look into it. Who knows if he will or not. But
yeah.
it's just amazing that they will put stuff into anything, and
right.
you have to look. And so even, you know, people say, well, I don't eat fast food, but I eat out a lot. You know, I just love to educate people also that most restaurants shop at these places, like Restaurant Depot.
Right.
Even the food that's at a nice restaurant.
Right, right. No, it's a good point. I mean, you really can drive yourself crazy. It's very hard. You're right. It's not, unfortunately, you know, food, something that used to be a source of, you know, great nourishment and community and all the things you've mentioned, it has really become a very toxic presence in our life.
Right, right. You can make yourself crazy. I want to talk more about, you know, some of the approaches you take with teachers and students and which ones work and which don't. But first, let's take a couple-minute break, and when we come back, let's get into a little bit more about your curriculum, okay?
Okay.
Everyone, don't go anywhere. I'm talking with Carolyn Cohen, one of the co-founders of Food Fight, and you're listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network. Be right back. Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network. And today my guest is Carolyn Cohen, and we're talking about the organization she co-founded called Food Fight. Carolyn, are you with me?
I am.
Great. So can you share with us what kinds of approaches in your curriculum resonate most with the teachers and the students and which ones don't?
Yes. Well, I can say right off the bat that what doesn't resonate is telling people to eat more fruits and vegetables. We know that, and for some of us, it does actually, you know, make a difference in our behavior. But for, I would say, the overwhelming majority, it doesn't. For whatever reason, that knowledge alone is not enough. But what we have seen work is getting people to understand the kind of their place in the food system. And it sounds so abstract, but we really kind of dig into, like what I was saying before, the ways that media shape our food choices, and the ways that this kind of social and political and economic underpinnings that make up our food environment. When people kind of open their eyes and see this and see that they, you know, we work in often the poorest districts in New York City, that are really targeted by the food industry and the marketing, the, you know, kind of advertising juggernaut, and they see that they really are being played. I mean, we all are, but
right, that
they
makes you
are
angry when you feel like you've been manipulated.
Right. You really, I mean, it's, and I can speak personally, you know, I mean, this is how I got into this work, is that I just, you know, I had my own children and I was working with these students and I started reading a lot. And the more I read and the more I understood about how this all works, the more enraged I became. And mm-hmm. I felt like I needed to make changes in my own diet. I was definitely not a paragon of health as a teacher. And I made really significant changes in what I ate and bought. And I see the teachers and students that we work with and the parents make the same changes. I mean, a lot of this is, and it's basic knowledge, you know. This is not rocket science. You do not need to be a nutritionist or a chef to understand, you know, how to eat. It's really basic skills, like learning how to read a label, learning how to make basic food, understanding, you know, a lot of the things you were talking about, like the preservatives, you know, mm-hmm. understanding that those are in everything, and especially for parents that have children, you know, when every time you give your kid a fluorescent, you know, something, whether
right.
it's Skittles or, you know, the multitude of things. And I have my own children, and I know how difficult it can be to steer clear of those things, but
I remember my kids wanting those Lunchables so
right.
badly,
you
know, because they're colorful and they're
right.
marketed to them and they look playful and they're going to be fun. I'm
right.
like, it's plastic food.
But you know what? When you show even the kids, and after, you know, after they work with us, and again, this is for high school students, for younger students, you do need to shape their palates. But for older students and for parents and teachers whose palates are already shaped, you really need to engage them on an intellectual level and show them, you know what, yes, Lunchables are convenient, and, you know, Philip Morris has made billions off of this very convenient product, but let's take a look at, you know, the 70-plus ingredients in Lunchables and how toxic they are, and, mm-hmm. you know, that half of them are known carcinogens and, you know, wreak havoc on our bodies. When parents learn this, you know, no parent wants to give their child toxic food. They really don't. And I will say too that, you know, I as I said before, we work in some of the poorest districts, but I also know some of the most sophisticated and intelligent parents who give their children the same food. So it's not just a class issue. It's really a cultural problem that we're dealing with. and need to address.
Mm-hmm. It also makes me angry at our government. I mean, that they've allowed this to take place, that they care more about the health of the corporations than they care about their
People. The people,
you know,
the
I mean,
public
it's just,
health.
It's mind-blowing blowing to me.
So the more, but my, our firm belief is that, as you say, it's not, the change will not come from government and it will not come from these corporations, you know, from the food industry waking up and deciding that they care more about public health than their profits. It comes from consumer demand. And when consumer demand shifts, their marketing, their offerings will shift. And so our emphasis is on shifting consumer demand, on getting people to demand healthier options. And we are seeing that at work every day in schools across New York City.
Mm-hmm. Now, that was another question I had, because you said you're working in some of the poorest districts. How do you get funding? Because, you know, I'm sure the program costs money and the poorest districts usually don't have money.
Right.
How
Most
does that work?
Most of our funding comes from foundations and individual donors. And we have some corporate support, but I would say the lion's share comes from several foundations, the Whole Kids Foundation and others, the Pellet Fund.
Mm-hmm.
And the Clineal Foundation are the three biggest.
Okay, so you're a 501c3.
Correct.
Uh-huh.
Actually,
well,
right
great.
Now we are being fiscally sponsored by FJC, but that's another story. But yes.
Funded by where?
FJC is our fiscal sponsor.
What is that?
It's an entity that, you know, essentially collects money for us. But, you know, it just makes
Good. Let them do
our
that.
Life a little easier.
Uh-huh. Well, that's great because those are the school districts. You know, I've worked on Long Island. Like I said, I worked at the Waldorf School, and I have another private school that's talking to me. But, you know, it's really hard for the public schools.
Yeah.
You know, I have joined, you know, Chefs Move to Schools, and I, you know, went on a few interviews to some of the public schools, but they wanted me to do something real, and there's no money.
Right.
You
it's
know,
very,
and
very difficult. And we, you know, we did initially charge for the Food Fight in the Classroom program, we charged $1,500 for, you know, for our curriculum, for visits from chefs, doctors, and nutritionists, for our week-long training program, which was clearly like we were really undercharging, and even that felt prohibitive for many schools that we actually really wanted to be in. And so we just decided to drop that charge and find the funding from other sources, because in order to continue working in the areas we're targeting, we have to do that.
Right, right. That's great, because that definitely makes such a big difference.
Mm-hmm.
Good. So if you could give one piece of advice to someone looking to change their eating habits, what would it be?
I would tell that person to start reading labels. I would make sure they understand that 4 grams of sugar equals 1 teaspoon of sugar. Just that little bit of information seems to have a huge impact on definitely what people are drinking, because they can see that there are 10 teaspoons of sugar in their Arizona iced tea and you know, their Snapple and all the other natural drinks that they think are really natural. So I would definitely have people make that conversion and understand how to read a label and a serving size, and to pay attention and to not, you know, we at Food Fight give people the 5-5-5 rule, which is to buy foods with 5 ingredients or less. So you need to read the label and see how many ingredients. And if it has 70, you know, you want to steer clear of it. But even much more than 5, 5 grams of fiber or more, which is hard and is not something that people are going to be able to do all the time, but it's something to strive for. You know, if you're buying crackers, don't buy something that has 0 fiber. Look at the label and make sure it has at least 3 grams of fiber, if not more. And 5 grams of sugar or less, unless it's dessert. So you don't want to be eating, you know, sugary cereals loaded with sugar for breakfast. You know, that's
mm-hmm.
dessert. You can have that for dessert. You just
right.
don't call it breakfast.
birthday glow in the dark.
Exactly. And trying, you know, to steer clear of foods that are fluorescent.
Right. Yeah. Good rules.
Yeah.
Very good. And why did you choose the name Food Fight?
We take our name seriously, you know. It actually came to me as a joke, but we quickly felt like it actually was apt because we do see our work as the good fight for good food. And it is a fight. It is a struggle every day, you know, to keep yourself, your family, your communities healthy. And, you know, it just felt like an apt representation of really who we are and our work.
Mm-hmm. One thing that you actually touched on before that I wanted to mention is when you said, look at the number of servings. That's something that I think so many people miss out on because, you know, you buy an individual bottle of, like, iced tea, and you
right.
think it's one serving.
Right.
But when you look at that iced tea, it's really supposed to be for two people.
Right, exactly.
You know?
We do
and
a demonstration.
So they're talking about an 8-ounce serving, but the bottle is 16 ounces.
Exactly.
So it's really double everything. When you drink that
right.
bottle of Snapple, it's double the calories and double the sugar.
Exactly. Exactly.
And most people don't see that.
Yep, that's really, really important. And again, you can teach someone that in 5 minutes, you know,
right.
and then we get emails all the time. Like, I can't believe how that's changed my view of the things that we eat. And I've dropped my sugar sweetened beverage habit and I look at cereal labels now and it does.
Yeah, just getting someone to give up soda, like to just drink water instead of anything else.
Yeah.
You know, just drink water.
Drink water. And you can add things to it. You know, you can.
And in New York, the water is pretty good still. I mean, we have to work, you know, keep
racking
out of New York State.
Well, we have traveled across the country and done our workshops for hundreds of teachers in different cities. And it's true that now I tell my New York audiences that that's not true everywhere, that you can't
right.
just turn on the tap and drink the water. So we're very lucky.
Right. We have to keep it lucky
right.
here in New York. So, you know,
and that's another big thing that we stress is just to drink more water. I mean,
right.
that is, you know, the first thing when Americans show up at a hospital, the first thing the doctors will do is hydrate you because most Americans, they assume, are dehydrated because most of us do not drink enough water. So that's also the first thing any diet will say is to drink more water. I mean, I think, you know, just making that change, and it's a great time, you know, we're heading into summer to do that, people see an enormous boost in just their energy level mm-hmm. and vitality.
Right. I don't know if you touch on this in your food fight, but I know, you know, it's an issue. At the same time, focusing is also something that I need to work on because I can do all over the place. But, you know, drinking out of the plastic bottles is usually not the best, especially in the summertime.
Right.
Because those trucks are not refrigerated that they come, you know, in, and they're sitting in a hot truck in hot plastic.
Mm-hmm.
And that's usually, you're better off, especially if you live where, like we do in New York, where you can drink from the tap. You're better off drinking right from the tap.
Mm-hmm.
If you have a filter, great, but if you don't, still, the tap is better than, I think,
yeah.
most of the bottled water.
Yeah, I would agree with that, actually, yeah.
So could you share with us, quickly before we run out of time, a story that you have seen, you know, from one of the either kids or parent or teacher, whichever story you'd like to share with us, where you could actually see how Food Fight has transformed someone's life?
Sure. Well, recently, this is actually a parent, more of a parent and principal and policy story, but it was very exciting to see that recently we did a parent workshop at one of our schools, and at the end, the principal got up to say, so now that you've learned all of this and now that you've heard all of this, I hope that you will support me next year in eliminating sugar-sweetened beverages from our school. And, you know, we thought that was so great. And then several parents stood up and said, why now? Why wait until next year? This was back in, like, early April.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, why wait? Why don't we do it right now? And they did. Within, like, 2 weeks, they had a no-sugar-sweetened beverage policy implemented in their school. And it was just really exciting to see that kind of momentum build so quickly and that kind of policy change happen. And of course it'll take time to really weed it all out, but they were just on fire and very motivated to make this happen as quickly as possible.
Great.
And those are the kinds of change that we'd like to see everywhere.
Right. Absolutely. Do you come across parents, because I certainly have, that will then, you know, stand up and go, why should you be telling me what I'm allowed to give my child? I think I want the Gatorade. My kid plays sports,
right,
and I want them to be able to have that Gatorade for the,
right,
you know, whatever it has in it.
Right. I think, I mean, it's a very good question, and I keep expecting that to happen because I know those parents are out there. And I haven't gotten
that. They all
that.
Live on Long Island.
They all know, believe me, there are plenty in New York. But they don't, I just think it's criminal that Gatorade is billed in this country as a health drink and sold to our athletes. And I talk a lot about Gatorade. The chemical that makes it that
and
lovely
colors.
Blue. Right, is TBHQ, and that is a known carcinogen. And this is something that I highlight in our workshop. So I think I've scared people off to, they don't want to approach me and tell me that they're clinging to their Gatorade. but I'm sure that there are many, I'm sure there are many that still think that they're going to continue to give it to their kids. But we can only, help those who want to learn and work with us.
Uh-huh. And how do you see your program expanding, let's say, the next 5 years? Where do you see yourself going?
We would like to continue to really expand both in terms of our depth and our reach. One of the things that's really exciting was we're beginning to implement grow towers in the schools where we work so that teachers and students can grow their own food indoors all year round. And just to keep doubling our numbers in New York City, we really would like to continue to meet the demand of all the schools that would like us there next year and beyond.
How many schools are you in now?
We have been all told a little over 45. I think it's like 47 schools in New York. And we've done, as I think I said earlier, that we've done these larger workshops for hundreds of teachers nationally. So we've been in Boulder and Austin and Houston, and we were in Arkansas last year, and that's also been very exciting.
Mm-hmm. Well, that is exciting. Well, I thank you so much. I mean, I am so supportive. I mean, everything you're doing is exactly what I'd love to be doing on Long Island. So,
we can make it to Long Island too.
We can talk
about
that. It's certainly needed. So thank you so much for your food fight.
Thank you.
And keeping it going and sharing your knowledge and your passion about eating healthier food and getting people to cook. All really great, really great.
Thank you.
How do people find out about you?
Foodfight.org is the best way.
Okay.
And you can always email me at carolyn@foodfight.org.
Thank you, Carolyn.
Okay, Bhavani,
really
thank
great.
You so much.
Thank you. And everyone listening, you've been listening with Carolyn Cohen, founder of Food Fight, and I'm Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network. See you again next week. Have a great rest of the week, and enjoy the beautiful weather. Bye for now.